your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here with us today. If you've heard the promotions throughout the week, a very difficult topic for our hour, both for me, for our listeners, not a topic that many people choose to discuss on their own, certainly not on live radio. We will be discussing suicide. From, I guess, the start to the finish, prevention, reality, and we'll be having several people on our hour, our live guests, who have been family members who have experienced suicide. We have a guest, former director of Mental Health America. Is that correct? Please.
Yeah, it is.
And we will we'll be taking calls throughout the air as well. I'll try not to be so down and blue about it, because I think the word we already used, any contagion. But that is our topic. We will be talking about suicide. And an uncomfortable topic for many. I am going to misspeak, use a word that may be uncomfortable, use a word that may be incorrect throughout the hour, because I have no knowledge of the topic. I do not have family members or friends that I'm aware of who have made an attempt, who have been, you know. And this was, let me introduce our guests. We have Margie Howe, a facilitator at Survivors of Suicide in the Charlottesville chapter. Thank you so much for being here. We have her husband, Nat Howell, both of whom, a son, committed suicide. Mary O'Leary. Mary?
Yes.
Also with us today, and Jenny Oliver. I kept wanting to use the word when I was talking with people, when I was setting this program up, talking about individuals who have attempted suicide, and what is the other word? Because the only other word I could think of was successful, and that seems so inappropriate.
I think we'd prefer it if people didn't use words like unsuccessful and successful. And if people die, then they died by suicide.
The word commitment also has a bad feeling for many people. It sounds like they were committed for a legal or crime or something. And so we try to avoid that one too, but it's hard. It's hard to avoid the words in common usage out there.
I'll do my best.
Rick, just to say, you know, you may be feeling uncomfortable about this, but we are so grateful from the Suicide Survivors Group that you're giving us an opportunity to talk about surviving suicide and suicide, because all of this helps break down some of the stigma and discrimination and difficulty that people have in discussing this very unusual topic. So thank you.
Well, and I thank the four of you for coming on during the hour. Again, people always ask me, oh, why are you doing that program? And, you know, oh, that's interesting, or oh, I've heard of that, or I know that person, or I participate in that organization. And when I answered this question for so many people this week, what's the program on? Oh. Pretty much end of conversation.
Rick, we don't handle death of any kind very well in this culture. And it becomes especially hard to deal with it, to face it, to know what to say, what to do about it when it's suicide, which is a much more complicated situation.
Well, that is our topic for the hour, folks. We'll talk with our guests for a while, and then we will open the phone lines. Let me give a thanks to the folks in Levinson's 94.7 for joining us, and our underwriters like Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. are hosting the Great Spring Gear Swap, and it's your chance to trade in gear and find gently used gear and apparel on Saturday the 16th. You can find out more, including swap rules, at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Berkshire Shopping Center in Charlottesville. They're in Lexington, Lexington Commons, and Chesterfield Town Center, both in Richmond, or online. It's brms.com. So, again, the topic today is about suicide. We have members and guests from the survivors of suicide in the Charlottesville chapter. One of the things, I don't want to spend too much time on statistics for the hour, but I think it's sort of enlightening and almost shocking at some of the numbers that I found when doing my homework for the program. About 90 Americans daily take their own life. And these are 2007 numbers. I don't know if you have more up to date. This is what I found online at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Women are three times more likely to make an attempt than men, but men more likely to actually commit suicide. Again, I'm fighting that successful word. Margie?
That's fine. It's actually on the statistics that we're talking about, says it's the 11th leading cause of death. However, I suspect it's probably the 10th, because there are many deaths in which suicide could have been the cause, like one car, one driver, one person in the car accidents. We just don't know what happened in those cases. And I suspect that some of them were suicides, actually.
But I think you're right to be shocked. More people die by suicide than die in aeroplane crashes, for example. So it's a huge, significant number. And it's something that goes across all groups, all age groups, both genders. As you pointed out, women attempt suicide more often than men. But it's not something that's significant to particular groups.
Again, our guests today, Margie Howell and Nat Howell, Jenny Oliver, and Mary O'Leary. Mary, I want to get you to jump in here and talk. Are you comfortable with the story? Because you're a parent.
Sure. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how this happened to you.
Well, my situation was that my son was 21, and this was 10 years ago, and he did this New Year's morning. He was in the Marines for a little under a year and had come home at Christmas break. And no one had a clue. No one saw anything in him to indicate he was thinking of suicide. We think it was a very impulsive act for him. So it just came out of nowhere, and everyone was just knocked off their axes. It was just a shock. And I suppose for the first year, I was just numb. You were just too numb to... I couldn't even react hardly. And then as time goes on, I was becoming more and more aware of it. But there was a lot of guilt for me that I hadn't been the right parent, and that's why he did what he did. And and the ripple effect, it's just amazing how many people it affects when someone does this. And
tell me more what you mean by that.
It's just, well, you know, it was myself and then his cousins, his friends, friends of friends, people at work. Oh, they've had this happen to them, their niece, their nephew, their brother. But it's amazing how little we realize how much we mean to everyone around us until something like this happens. And unfortunately, the person who does it doesn't get to see how much they're loved.
That's Mary O'Leary speaking about how the suicide in her family occurred and I guess reached her as a parent. Jenny, Mary's story ends with talking about the effect on so many others in the family. It seems like that would be almost a stamp mark on every case, every incident, how the death affects so many others, and I believe the phrase used was ripple effect.
I think that's absolutely right. It is a ripple effect. Something like 250,000 people a year in America will be affected by the death by suicide of someone who they love. And that's a huge number of people. That's all I can say about that.
What do we do as a group, as a family, a parent, a country, an organization, to let those who are considering this as their solution, how do you let them know ahead of time?
Well, that's a hugely complex question. If there were a single path to suicide, it would be so much simpler to intervene. But there isn't. But some of the things that people can do is to be more aware of what's going on in their loved one's lives, whether they've got things going on that might be important in terms of that person's mental health, for example, or whether there are other issues going on in the family or with friends that are important triggers for huge distress. I mean, when we're talking about suicide, we're not talking about people actually wanting to die. What we're talking about is people who can no longer tolerate the pain that they're currently experiencing. And the only way that they see out of that pain is death by suicide. So there are lots of issues around how we as a country, as a society, as families, as friends, as employers, can pay more attention to the mental health and the distress that people in our world feel.
I think we're all so busy these days that we often don't spend enough time just sitting with our family members, our friends, and really giving them a chance to talk about what's going on in their lives, how hard things are for them, that sort of thing. We need to listen, really listen.
We are speaking with our guest today about suicide, a topic that hopefully is maybe difficult to discuss, but is a little easier to listen to. And a little later in the hour, you're welcome to discuss it with us by dialing in. Write down the phone number, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Our guest today, Margie Howell and her husband, Nat, Mary O'Leary, and Jenny Oliver. Mary has told what happened in her family. Nat and Margie, can you share your story with us?
Yes. Our son, Edward, was 32 years old and was living in Arlington. He worked for the U.S. government, had a very good job, but he'd become frustrated with the bureaucracy, which I can understand. He was planning the morning that he killed himself to submit his resignation, but he had another job waiting for him, and we thought everything had been resolved. We knew he'd been unhappy in his work. When I got up that morning, there was a note on my email. I had been in touch with him until midnight the night before. It was a note on the email. The title of the note was Final Curtain, and it was an indication that he had come to the end of the road. We tried to call, and of course there was no answer. We finally got the police there, and he had killed himself. Very neatly. He was a neat person, but it was a complete surprise to us. And I would only make one point, because I also lost a brother by suicide. Sometimes when a person has resolved on this, they can be very foxy about giving any clue that they're thinking about this. They can go to very elaborate schemes to cover it up. So it is a doubly difficult task to dissuade them if you don't even know they're considering it.
Folks today as we talk about suicide, from survivors of suicide. There is a Charlottesville chapter. And I want to make sure that we give out that phone number and any contact information several times. Margie?
I'm the person to call, and my phone number is a local number, 974-9314. And I'm also listed on the website for the foundation, Suicide Foundation.
And I think the way I found it was to just Google Suicide Charlottesville. Take the step, whether it's yourself, whether it's someone in your family, medically, however you know or have belief that this is in consideration, please take the step, do what you can. Don't worry about being considered in the way or anything else. Do your best.
Absolutely. Act on your gut feeling that something is not wrong and talk to that person. Call family, other family, get people involved, and try to get the person to consider some sort of treatment. You know, if you have a broken arm or if you have an infection, you go get treatment for it. Now, there are no guarantees that the infection will be cured, but pretty much it's likely it will be, and pretty much the doctor will set your arm right. But if you just don't treat an infection or a broken arm or any other disease, including depression, then chances are it may get much worse.
All right. Nat, you mentioned how another person in your family, is this something that happens family-wise once one person in the family takes this step that another is more likely to do so?
Well, I would have thought my brother, who was very close to my son, and was very angry at my son for many years for having taken his life, would have been sort of inoculated against this. So it's a very unpredictable thing. I never thought he would take the same route. And there, again, were no indications, although it turned out after this occurred that he had been planning this for almost a year.
I have no knowledge, I have no feelings from the past that allow me to do anything except rely on shock factor when we discuss this. Margie, you have monthly groups.
Yes.
Someone asked me about survivors of suicide, and I said, well, I'm assuming that it's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous for people who have this experience in their past to help them discuss it, etc. Is that correct?
That is correct. We meet on the first Thursdays of each month, unless that happens to be a holiday or for some reason we can't meet, a snowstorm or something. Then we would meet the following Thursday. But it's usually the first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. And we have a meeting room at the Church of the Incarnation, which is behind Toys R Us. And I can give more specifics if anyone wants to call me at 974-9314.
And again, we will put this on the podcast page, SeavillePodcast.com. You'll find Wake Up Call on there with the newest program listed, and then on the left column you'll see Wake Up Call listed amongst the others, and you can click on that to find something in particular. Jenny?
I just wonder sometimes whether people understand what suicide survivors actually means. When we're talking about suicide survivors, we're talking about the people, the loved ones, the family, the friends, the husbands, the fathers, the mothers, etc.
I assumed
we're not talking about people who have attempted suicide.
And that's what I assumed when we first started this.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous,
yeah.
People who had experienced alcoholism or living with that and trying to rid themselves or help them behave with that in their lives. And that was my assumption originally, was I thought, oh, well, one person on the panel will have that in their past.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anyone in the organization who comes to the monthly meetings with this? Because I would think that it's got to be part of your life, whether it's a lifelong, like they say that alcoholism is, or certainly a long period in your life where you attempt to handle the feelings properly.
You're talking about, have we got people who come to our meeting who have attempted suicide?
Correct.
We have had a couple of people. One young lady came and talked about the experience, which I think was helpful to hear from someone who had tried it, to the family and friends, and realized that they weren't alone, and it wasn't a strange thing in a way that it had happened to somebody. And she had survived and was able to talk about it. She'd recovered enough that she could share with us what it was like to be in that much pain and just see no way out. And she was one of the lucky ones who got help. If we find that one of the relatives or family members of someone who comes to our meetings are themselves going into a deep, deep depression and are in such pain that we have real concerns about handling it on their own, we will certainly urge them to get treatment, and we'll help them find treatment to help them get through this tough period. And we hope to convey a message, those of us who are, like, we're 15 years out almost from our son's suicide. Mary's 10 years, as she said. We want them to know that we can survive this with a little help, paying attention to what we need along the way.
All right. We are talking about suicide. Our guests today, Mary, Jenny, Margie, and Nat. And use your phone. Dial us up. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. It is 1121 on the wake-up call. Markets have Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy today, highs 70 to 75. Mostly cloudy tonight, lows 55 to 60. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny but windy. 20% chance of showers over in the valley. Highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's little clouds out there in the sky. 51 in the valley, 50 in Lynchburg, 59 in Richmond, 50 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Ben Around Tattoos for supporting the program today. You can find them in Charlottesville and downtown Waynesboro. Featuring male and female tattoo artists, they have thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro and at 701 West Main Street in Charlottesville. For more information, it's benaroundtattoos.com. And WNRN wants to congratulate the final grand prize winner from the spring fund drive, Marshall LaFleur of Richmond, turned in his donation into four tickets plus VIP camping to Camp Out East this summer. He and three guests will be rocking out to Cracker, Camper Van Beethoven, Sons of Bill, and more June 17th and 18th in Crozet. Thanks to everyone who contributed to WNRN spring fund drive and helped us hit our goal of $90,000 pledge. And I didn't do a very good job last week of thanking everyone who took special time in my 1 hour. So let me give a thanks to Shane Harrison and Krieger, Allison Moore, some family members, my mom, my sister, my friend John Herman, Irene Burlock, the Lorenzonis, Gene McCusker, Matt Hodges have been with us for a while, Professor Ramazzani, as well as Elaine and Catfish, and then another friend from work who asked to remain anonymous. So thank you very much. I think I hit a near high, all-time high, $1,185 in 1 hour, $1,185 pledged during my hour. Thank you so much to all those folks, not just the ones who pledge, but the ones who listen. Again, you're welcome to use the phone lines, your question or comment. We certainly have a lot of material here with our guests. Jenny, you had something you wanted to make sure that we tossed out?
Yeah, just a couple of things, because you were asking Margie about suicide survivors and who came to that. And I thought it might be important just to give a couple of numbers. First one is the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and that's 1-800-273-8255. And that's a free 24-hour-a-day hotline. It's available to anybody who's in crisis or in emotional distress. The other number I'd like to give is particularly for veterans. Mental Health America in Charlottesville support a program that's run by an ex-veteran, Don McNichol, and his telephone number is 434-409-8246. Region 10 has an emergency service for people in crisis locally. Their number is 434-972-1800.
And, you know, Kristen's here producing the show today and helping us put the podcast together. And I think we'll ask Kristen to include some or all of that contact information on the podcast for those who, for again, whatever reason. It's not just because this is an experience in your life that you are going through, but for those who see someone going through this and need to offer any help that they can, whether it's direct or indirect, I think that's important for everyone. Again, Nat Howe, Margie Howe, Mary O'Leary, and Jenny Oliver. Jenny, a former director of Mental Health America, Margie, Nat, and Mary, all having this experience in their life with their children. I want to talk for a minute to Margie and Mary and Nat about the emotions that follow this. Mary, you mentioned guilt as a parent. Tell me a little bit more, because I want to know the emotions that come through. I would think that certainly guilt, there must be some anger, and anything else that happened to you during sort of a post time period.
Well, it was so difficult. The emotions, they're amplified so much. Initially, when I found my son, I just could not understand why he did what he did. And then it automatically, I'm like, it must have been something that happened where he was right before he came home. And then it just kind of flew into, oh, I made him do this. You know, I was the nagging parent, you know, and I had just driven him over the edge. And the guilt, there was a lot of guilt. And somebody did ask me once, were you angry at him? And anger never even occurred to me initially, because I thought, how could I be angry with somebody who was so in so much pain that they took their life with their own hand? So anger didn't come until later, and the anger was not most... I was angry at him because my life had then been destroyed as I saw it then.
Are there other children that you have?
I was a single mom. He was the only child.
The only child?
Yeah. So... it just was very hard. Most of my battle was accepting that I'll never understand why this happened. And with time, I have been able to do that. It's a constant. My life has changed. I'm different for it. And but every day, your sad spells become less and your happy spells become more, and you can continue to go on. For me, I was just blessed to have had my son for 21 years, and that's how I kind of survived. There could have never been a better gift than to have ever had him.
Have you looked for answers, explanations as to why?
In the beginning, yes, and I had to get therapy, you know, twice a week for many, many weeks, a year, 2 years. I never, you know, him being in the military, I wondered if that might have been an effect or cause, but I never really blame the military. I guess somehow deep down I understood it's just so terribly complex, there's no one answer to it. And it's just unfortunate that he was touched by this. I was never that aware of suicide issues until this happened, and so it's hard for me to understand where people on the other side, how they can't possibly be aware of suicide, because I'm so immersed in it because of how it's affected my life. So our goal is to try to get that out there for people to know it is prevalent and it can be intervened.
That's Mary O'Leary, who had the experience of a son commit suicide. Jenny Oliver, former director of Mental Health America, is that a stereotypical, standard story and response?
I think Mary's missed a bit out that I really admire about her. That is about how she is able to help other people in the suicide survivors group by describing what she experienced, the shock, the what happened, how can I understand this, the anger, and the guilt. That's very common. And having people like Mary and Margie at the group with people who are newly bereaved is really important, because people can see, hear, and listen to their experience and their wisdom. They're experts by experience about how you get through this terrible, terrible tragedy. And one of the stories that Mary tells, if I could tell it on her behalf, if she wouldn't mind, is the business about trying to find a reason. People always desperately trying to find a reason. Why did this happen?
Well, that's how it's...
How could we have stopped it?
That's the book and the play and the movie always have a letter or some reason.
Yeah. But Mary's therapist wisely got her to try and put a puzzle together. And she struggled with that puzzle for quite some time and then came to the conclusion that there was a piece missing, so she was never going to be able to solve the puzzle. And so her therapist gave her a very concrete example of what many people try to do, which is to try and find a reason for something that is so complicated and so complex that often there isn't a straightforward reason. So Mary's explanation of what happened to her is a very common one.
And I went through some of the same things, this is Margie speaking again, with an added twist that I was, at that point, a retired psychiatric nurse, and I had dealt with many, many people and their families over the years, and I was pretty good at it, given the knowledge that I had, but I had no personal experience at that time. And that's made all the difference in terms of the effectiveness and the realness of my working with people now. And so I bring those skills. At the time, yes, you look for answers. I knew it was a complicated thing. I had a whole list of answers. Among them, my badness as a parent, too, of course, for a while. And then I got angry at how painful this was and how this didn't seem to be going anywhere. You know, as long as I was wallowing in all these horrible feelings and blaming myself, that wasn't very productive. And that was the beginning of my taking steps. And my husband and I early on began reaching out to other people who had experienced suicide. I think ours, Edward died in September, and in December, a student at UVA had actually hanged himself in a room on the lawn. And he offered for us to talk with the parents, and we did. And that was a very pivotal point for us, seeing the value of it helped us more than it helped them. It was very therapeutic for all four of us, all the parents involved.
11:33 on the wake-up call as we're talking a very special and, I guess, informative and touching topic today as we talk about suicide. With some members of Survivors of Suicide in the Charlottesville chapter. They do meet on the first Thursday of every month. Church of the Incarnation, that's the Catholic church over by the Pepsi Place and the Pepsi Senior Center, is that correct?
Not far from that. It's more behind Toys R Us off of Hillsdale okay. Avenue.
Uh-huh. We do want to thank Dixon Disposal for allowing Wake Up Call to be on WNRN today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. And when Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Find them online at DixonDisposal.com. Dial them up, 978-2111. Nat, you are the father in the room. Mm-hmm. And I would think that having the mother and the father here together, did you experience different emotions at different times and different levels? Like the mother is supposed to be the one who's providing the care, and maybe Margie feels the guilt first, and you feel the anger first. And I don't know. I'm obviously sending out answers that may not right. belong. But did you have different emotions, levels, et cetera?
Well, I think we did. I mean, this was an adult who had our son was an adult, and of course, I spent the first month numb more than anything else, but routinely canceling credit cards and. All of the subscriptions and all of the gathering information. I had to file a tax return for him. You can't get away from the government. So I was a little later really having this sink in. And I think men tend to grieve differently. I'm not sure better or worse than women do. Men tend to grieve by doing something and not just smoothing. But I think they can benefit from participating in these groups, because I certainly found it very helpful to me. And as I said, it was one of the ways of working your way out of this is to interact with others who shared it and perhaps be able to help someone who's more recently bereaved than you are.
One of the things, again, I mentioned this earlier, I have no experience in this topic at all. And one of the bits of information, and I can't remember whether I read it in an article or saw it online or heard it on the radio, that sort of prompted me to jump on this is that suicide is the fifth leading cause of death among those 5 to 14.
Wow.
Why is this, it even go to some age as young as 5? That's what caused me to sort of sit back with my eyes wide open. I don't want to say that I can understand, because I can't, that a 14-year-old, certainly whether you talk about it in our culture today, whether it's bullying, whether there's the adulthood that seems to strike at an ever younger age, so that someone who is 14 or 13 or 12 or maybe even 11. But why do you even put the number 5 there as the youngest of that youngest age group? I find that and fascinating. Again, it's like using the word successful as we started the program. I find that horribly fascinating. Jenny, explain that to me.
I wish I could.
Well, I don't mean explain it so that I can understand it, but explain it in a way that literally educationally explains the number 5 as being an age group that is even needed to explain that statistic.
I don't know. I think what we do is set up all kinds of systems, including systems for 5-year-old children. And where we said earlier that suicide, death by suicide, is a very complex pathway, and that there are all kinds of vulnerability issues associated with how people get into that pathway. And some of the things that we know actually make things worse. So you were talking about young people. Let me tell you about a young man who died by suicide a couple of years ago, who was an athlete, he was a good scholar, he was a Boy Scout, he was the kind of boy that you'd want your boy to be. He made a mistake. He took a marijuana-type pill in school. He made a mistake, and he was discovered. He was suspended from school. He was suspended for 13 weeks. Now, we know that young adolescents require the social support and the things that make them feel good in order to feel good about themselves, particularly if there's a crisis going on. So here we've got a good athlete, a young man who's got lots of friends at school. He's achieving well in school. Suddenly, they isolate him. He's not able to go to school. He doesn't have his friends. He doesn't have his school. He doesn't have a whole lot of other things. And he dies by suicide. Now, that's a very serious lesson for school systems to be learning
that, you know, they need to know more about mental health. They need to know more about suicide. If you went to any school, you'd have people there who know how to do CPR. You'd have people there who know how to do first aid. What they often don't know how to do, and what a lot of us don't know how to do, is how to give mental health first aid. There's no big national program for mental health first aid. And there needs to be, because we all need to be better listeners. We all need to know about how we can help people who are so distressed, even when they're age five.
11:40 on the wake-up call. We're going to take a quick break. Our guests today, Margie Howe and Nat Howe and Mary O'Leary, all with the experience of a suicide in their family. Jenny Oliver, former director of Mental Health America. We've spent a lot of time talking about the past. I think after I do this, we need to talk about the prevention. But I want to also come back in this last 20 minutes and talk about the elderly. We just spent and talked about the youngest age. I think we need to move up to the elderly. So 11:40 on the wake-up call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
All right. The relationship between a therapist and patient is built on trust, a trust that is too often betrayed. One local therapist has already been once punished for inappropriate conduct, and now legal documents suggest his behavior is a pattern. The Charlottesville Pavilion now has a new name. What do you think of that? And what's so scary about raw milk? The Hook on newsstands now, and stylish all the time. Support today coming from The Backyard, the university's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a spring menu, daily specials, and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. The outdoor patio is now open for lunch and dinner. The Backyard is a proud sponsor of Sigma Nu's Zendu Charity Concert this Saturday. For more information, it's 202-8215. You can find them at thebackyarduva.com. And let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics. They've been with us for a long, long time. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, brgtshirts.com. All right, let's get back to our topic today, suicide, with members of Survivors of Suicide, the local Charlottesville chapter. We've been talking about stories from the past, emotions that go with that, and there's still more to approach from that viewpoint, but we really haven't done much with prevention other than mentioning the phone numbers and the websites that are out there. Once again, Survivors of Suicide, the Charlottesville chapter, does meet monthly, first Thursdays of every month at the Church of the Incarnation here in Charlottesville. That's behind the Toys R Us area. You can go to the website. We will include in our podcast information some links, some phone numbers, both locally and nationally. I don't know who to ask first. I have Margie and Mary and Nat and Jenny here about prevention and what the warning signs are, if there are any. I mean, Nat, I believe you said something about how your son sort of had been planning this for a year, but you had
no my brother.
Your brother. My sorry for saying that incorrectly. Yeah. But a family member who you didn't know had been doing this for, had been thinking about this for a year's time.
And his wife and daughter didn't know either. So, I mean, he was very good at keeping this quiet. For example, he went around to all of his friends, and he had many friends, and visited them in the months before he did this. They didn't realize it, but he was saying goodbye and gave no indication to them. Nobody picked up that this was going to happen. So it's a very tricky thing, and if the people closest to you don't see it, I mean, that's where it would show up first. I think what we need to do is recognize how many stressors there are in our lives today. I mean, things we don't think of, like making a move. If you add all of these things up hitting you at the same time, you probably can chart when people get into a danger zone.
And in your brother's case, he had been out of work. He had resigned a job, and he had written the great American novel, which had not been picked up by a publisher. And he couldn't find a job that paid as much as his old one, so he resisted going to work at a different level and just started using the family resources to keep them going. Again, a lot of this was unknown to his wife. She knew he'd been out of work. But he just sort of dug the hole and kept digging it deeper and did it all very privately. Our son, on the other hand, gave, you know, looking back, I realized more very acutely that some of it had been a warning. He had had some health problems, along with the stresses in his work. He hadn't been taking care of himself, and he wasn't sleeping well. It turned out he had a very severe case of sleep apnea, which means that he was sleep deprived for many, many months, which had its effects on his body metabolically and in other ways. And he had gained a tremendous amount of weight, and we kept saying, you've got to talk to a doctor. And he kept saying, I can do this on my own. He had had weight problems earlier in his life, and so he was going to lose it on his own, he kept saying. And finally, he and I had some very good talks. My sister died that summer in the middle of August, and that was very upsetting for him, too. And he sort of was falling apart at work and decided to take some time off when his dad said, come on down, let's help you get straightened out here and all that. And he'd spent 2 or 3 weeks with us just before he died. And we felt he was working the problems through. We were willing to let him call the shots. You know, you don't tell a 32-year-old you've got to go to the doctor, or you don't take them. You don't pick them up and take them like you would a toddler. And so we were working with him and trying to help him work these things out. And the decision to change jobs was a healthy one, we felt, to get out of the system he was in, where he was carrying way too much responsibility beyond his rank. And unfortunately, that transition was a difficult time because he felt like he was letting his friends at work down. He was a very loyal soul who had spearheaded a lot of changes in his organization, but he was having trouble getting others to subscribe to these changes, and so he needed a fresh chapter in his life. And unfortunately, that wasn't enough. I think he just was so completely depleted at that point and in such pain that he just needed to get out of it.
It's also interesting, I think a lot hinges on your coping skills, which I didn't ever think of before this happened. It's all about coping with situations and how one knows how to do that or doesn't know how to do that.
Do you have an understanding of that person's ability of that before you ever get to this point? I mean, could you say something about your sister or brother or someone else, Mary, in your family, if just said, check this off on their list, good coping skills, bad coping skills? Is that something that you have the ability to do?
Again, it's so complex. And I guess a lot of times you base what everybody else is feeling by how you handle things. You kind of get lost in the fact that others are different. And it's like, if I were able to cope with everything I could cope with, certainly he could. But I thought he was coping well, but apparently not, or at least at that moment, he was not.
That's Mary O'Leary here talking about her son who committed suicide, Margie Howe and Nat Howe as well. Jenny Oliver, director from Mental Health America. Jenny, I don't know if there's an academic list of things that can be warning signs, but I'm also interested, is there an academic list of deterrents to someone who may be considering suicide?
Well, there are both of those, but as you've heard powerfully from Margie and Mary, that people have vulnerability factors, and those are pretty complicated. So what we know is that people who are isolated, people who've got some mental health issues going on, people who have got terrible stresses going on in their lives are very vulnerable.
Addictions.
and addictions and alcohol abuse. These are all factors that are important. And the protective factors are about not feeling alone, the kind of coping skills that Mary talked about. But the key to all of this, if somebody is feeling in crisis, is feeling that they're beginning to feel and talk and think in their head about suicide, then what they need more than anything else is somebody else to hear what they're saying, to see it, to be able to talk to them about it. And that's, I mean, all of us, at some point in our life, suicide will cross our mind. For nearly everybody in the world, it crosses our mind at some point. The difference for these folks is that it's crossed their mind, but they've also got all this other stuff going on, whether it's a serious depression or a huge critical crisis in their family or employment, and they haven't got the resources available to them, they think, to help ease that pain. So they're terribly isolated with that. So the most important thing that anybody can do, confronted by a friend, an employee, a family member, is to talk to them about it, to recognize, to say, I see you're not looking very well right now. Is there something I can do about that? And, you know, people are always scared to say, are you thinking about suicide, thinking that somehow that's going to make somebody commit suicide? It doesn't. It's such a relief for a person who's been thinking about suicide to have the opportunity to say yes. And then you act on that basis. You're talking about two things, though. You're talking about what happens to individuals. How can we prevent, we being family, friends, etc., how can we prevent suicide at an individual level? But there are big issues about how do we, as a country, as a state, as a city, how do we make sure that we've got the best services and interventions available to reduce suicide, death by suicide. And that's a whole big issue.
You're talking about two things, because I didn't even consider that. I'm not smart enough to think about that on a by level. So I think that you can go, whether you go to survivors of suicide, whether you go to a medical issue, whether mm-hmm. you Google it online, mm-hmm. almost everything that comes back is an individual way to help. What do you tell me a little bit more about what you're talking about from a community or larger level?
Okay. We know, as Margie and Mary have been talking, that that people have a lot of vulnerabilities. And we know that, you know, it's not a straightforward pathway to suicide. So we know that there are some high-risk groups. You incidentally talked about older people a few minutes ago.
Yes, I found that, again, fascinating is the word that pops into mind. Frightening may be more appropriate, about the large numbers.
Yeah. And one of the things that's happened is that because of those large numbers that have been increasing over the decades, people paid attention to that in primary health care and in other health services. And by 2007, the numbers have begun to fall. So if we pay attention to these things, we can set up systems that are much more helpful to people who are at high risk. But we have to make sure, you know, we know what it's like in Charlottesville and the state and the country. Our systems are all over the place. They're not joined up. Our health services are not joined up. Our ways of working with people who are vulnerable are not joined up. We've got to find better ways of doing that. And ways to fund them. And there are two things happening right now. One is that in 2010, a new National Alliance for the Prevention of Suicide was established. The important thing about that was that it brought together the military, the private sector, the non-profit sector, and government, whether that's local government, state government, or national government. So now we're going to have a whole big program that's going to deal with some of these high-risk groups. And the other one is a more recent report by the American Association of Suicidology, which is really about ways to collaborate.
We were talking about the elderly, and a question came in How do some medicines cause suicidal thoughts? Are there medicines out there for the elderly? Why is there such a large percentage attributed to the elderly as it gets? And I know I can find it in this large page of statistics, but older people, suicide rates for men rise with age, most significantly after 65. The rate of suicide in men 65 and older is 7 times that of females. And I can keep going, but it's inappropriate at some point and kind of whatever. Margie?
At age 65, many people retire. And if you haven't made some plans for your retirement and what you're going to do with yourself the rest of your life, that can be a really depressing jolt. And sometimes it takes people a while to find whatever their volunteer activities or part-time work or getting around to writing that book they never wrote. You know, there are all sorts of things that can be done to make that a very productive time of your life. We're desperately in need of volunteers all over the
boredom?
Place. Boredom could be one.
Lack of direction.
Lack of a purpose in life is a very bad one. If you don't have some reason to live, to get up every morning, and that goes on and on and on for years, if you aren't able to construct a new life for yourself after you retire, then I would think that you are very much very vulnerable to perhaps thinking, well, I just don't enjoy life anymore.
The other two are physical poor health. You know, none of us getting any younger. I'm 65 today, so I'm conscious of the fact that my body's letting me down. Thank you.
Thank you for letting us spend it here with such a wonderful
But the other major issue, too, is around social isolation. You know, we talked earlier about the need for people to have contact with other human beings. And more than anything, older people get more and more socially isolated and lonely.
And can't control their physical functions after a while.
Yeah. But I think people are getting better. You know, I think that's why there is a decline in the actual numbers of people dying by suicide amongst the elderly, because folks are getting better at understanding the kind of multi-factors that go to make up, to bring somebody to the point of death by suicide.
All right, 11:57, we're just on our last few minutes here. Our topic today has been about suicide, sort of learning more about it, understanding as best we can, getting some stories that go along with what's happened in the families of Margie Howell, Mary O'Leary, Annette Howe, and Jenny Oliver, former director of Mental Health America, explaining to me, because I know nothing, and hopefully to a few others who are listening. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Drew Thompson just walked in. He'll be taking over at noon with Les Temps Perdue. He'll have the best of 80s and 90s alternative music, brought to you in part by Orzo and the Visualite, and he welcomes requests. So just literally like 120 seconds left. And something we talked about at the very beginning of the program was, and Jenny, I think you used the word contagion, if I pronounced that properly. And I guess the more simple word is copycat. Research has shown that graphic, sensationalized, or romanticized descriptions in the news media can contribute to that. And I noticed it seemed to be especially associated with the creative people in our world. I don't know that I understand how that seems appealing to someone, because Kurt Cobain did so. Then that makes it, is it more acceptable or more appealing?
I think it's not just the creative and the artistic souls who die by suicide. I think there's also an issue about copycats in very ordinary places, in schools, in communities. And that's why we need to be very careful about, particularly in the media, about how suicide is portrayed, that we don't make huge dramas out of things, that we focus on the things that we need to focus on, which is, how do we help prevent suicides? how do we get to grips with the kind of high-risk groups, often includes young people. I think mostly it's young people we're talking about in terms of contagion.
And especially those with very, very high standards that maybe they could never hope to meet,
yeah.
And that whittles away at our self-esteem. If we're forever trying to reach things we can't reach, I think that it happened with our son, that his standards were so high that he never felt good about all the things, the wonderful things he was doing and his accomplishments.
Well, unfortunately, our hour is up. I do want to thank all of you for coming in for the hour. That's Mary O'Leary, Margie Howell, Jenny Oliver, and Nat Howell. Thank you so much for what I think certainly was a difficult topic for me to understand it and discuss it in an educational manner without sensationalizing it and asking any appropriate questions. If you tuned in at the last part of the program or any time where you didn't get the entire 60 minutes, www.cvillepodcast.com. We will put this up for the hour because maybe you want to listen to it with the right person or at the right time. Please do so. Margie, the number for survivors of suicide, the Charlottesville chapter?
Yes, to find our group, it's 974-9314. And I'm sort of a one-woman answering service, but I will get back to you.
All right. Thank all four of you very much.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you very much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.